noble cause for one thing. Okay, so I'm going to start the recording.
Okay.
So I'm going to introduce myself. This is Forrest Solis interviewing Tiffany Ramirez on June 20th, 2016 at 7:20 p.m. for the Creative Push Project. Okay. So if you can take us back to like as early as the conception. Was it planned?
Conception was not planned. We had been dating for about a year. He was in a very horrible relationship, so he does have an older son, and we were just filling it out. It was late October, early November, and then finally December, January, I started feeling weird, and I was like, something's not right. So I took a pregnancy test, and it came back positive. And then we decided, okay, what are we going to do? So I told my parents, he told his parents, and we decided to get married soon after that. So I was married to him before Christian was born. I love pregnancy at first. I always was told I couldn't get pregnant because I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it was very hard. At about 3 months during my course of pregnancy, I stood up and blood came gushing out of me. And I was rushed to the emergency room. And they put me then on a high-risk pregnancy and total bed rest. So I got put on family medical leave immediately. I couldn't work anymore. And that was devastating because at that point in time, I was actually an executive assistant for a software company. So I was traveling all the time. And I couldn't do that anymore. So conception wasn't planned, but it happened. And I mean, I'm very happy with the outcome of everything. So
so did you have a support network? I mean, you were at home with someone keeping you company.
As far as support network, my family, my mother being, this was her first grandchild, so she was very supportive of the situation. But her and my father did work full time. They retired from the military and got pretty good jobs working as government contractors. My mom worked for Aerospace in El Segundo, and my dad worked for Boeing in Huntington Beach. So they worked massive amount of hours, and then my husband worked massive amount of hours. So I could call people, and then once my family got wind of me being sick, cousins started coming over every day. Being from an Hispanic family, I was constantly being cooked for, let me do this for you, or do you want your house cleaned? Or we? So I got a lot of perks out of it. It was nice being on bed rest for a while, but it got really boring. And I definitely wanted to get up and walk around and, you know, go shopping for the baby and do this and that. And just, I wasn't able to physically. I was so sick from the very beginning. I knew that I was sick, and I kept trying to voice it to my physician, but he kept putting it off on, oh, this is your first pregnancy, you don't really know what you're feeling. And I kept telling him, no, I'm pretty sure I know my body, something's not right, I don't feel right inside. So about 4.5 months, I rapidly started putting on weight, and I wasn't able to eat, so I kept asking, something has to be wrong with me. And at that point in time, he was like, well, let's just check some things. And my blood pressure started to rise. So then I was on a strict, you have to lay on the left side of your body. You can't be up more than 30 minutes. If you have leg swelling and it gets bigger than this, then you need to come into the hospital. And at that point in time, I started going to labor and delivery every Monday, Wednesday, Friday to get monitored because they were starting to get pretty worried about me.
How far along were you at this point?
About 4.5 months. So I was still very early in my pregnancy. At that point in time, because how everything was going, my parents decided, let's start planning your baby shower. That's something we need to do so we can get this done as soon as possible because we don't know what's going to happen. So I planned my baby shower, and I was going to be exactly 6 months, or 6 months? No, 7 months, the day of the baby shower, which was July 16th. Well, I made it to the day of the baby shower, and I got through the baby shower. At that point in time, though, my ankles were about the size of my thighs, and I was out of breath all the time. I could barely move, and I just kept thinking, there's no way that I am this fat. There's no way I gained this much weight. There's no way. Something has to be going on. And I, like I said, I had been in labor and delivery, and every time they're like, oh, everything's fine. The baby's moving. Heart rate's great. We keep monitoring everything. You can go home. You can go home. So after the baby shower, I looked at my parents and my husband, and he was like, well, I have to take my mom home. You know, are you going to be okay? Yeah, yeah, I'll be fine. And then after he left, I told my mom, I don't really feel good. I'm just going to go to labor and delivery. You know what always happens. I'm going to get monitored and they'll send me home. I'll call you back. So I drove myself to labor and delivery. I walked in and the nurse immediately looked at me and said, what have you been doing all day? I said, oh, it was my baby shower. And she's like, you don't look yourself today. And I was like, I don't really feel good. You know, I have this pain in my chest, like heartburn really bad. But I didn't eat too much. And she's like, well, let's get you up onto the monitor. They hooked me up to the monitor. And then within 5 seconds, she kind of lost color in her face. And I was like, what's going on? And she's like, nothing. I'll be right back. So she went and made a phone call. 5 minutes later, my doctor came running. I like literally skid into the room. I was like, hi, why are you here? And he's like, I just want to check some things. So he kept monitoring me, and he just looked at me and he said, I think we're going to be admitting you. I said, what do you mean? I've never been admitted. He's like, no, we're going to admit you because your blood pressure is really high right now. We really need to start you on a medication to make sure we can drop it. And we don't want your baby out yet, especially not at this hospital because we don't have a NICU. So I said, okay, can I make a phone call? Can I call someone, you know? And he was like, yeah, no problem, but let's start the IV and let's start the medication process. I was like, okay, no problem. So they started magnesium, which is a medication that they use to drastically lower your blood pressure, because at that point in time, he told me my blood pressure was about 190 over 100. I was like, okay, yeah, no problem. We can do this. He said, that's the pain that you feel. It feels like heartburn, but it's really not heartburn. You have preeclampsia, which is pregnancy-induced hypertension. And that's why we keep saying, lay on your left side, do this, because your arteries actually can't take it right now. The pressure's too high in them. So I was like, okay, I'm going to call my mom. Let me just call my mom. So I called her. She called my husband. And it took a while, but before I knew it, she was there, and then he was there, and they said, well, we're just going to monitor her here for the night, and then we'll see how it goes tomorrow. So on the 17th, they came in, and they told me, well, your blood pressure's still going up, and you're not having contractions, so we're going to transport you to a different hospital further down the road because they have everything that you need there. So I got transported to actually one of the biggest teaching hospitals, and they literally put me in a room right outside the nurse's station. And the room was gigantic. I kept thinking, oh, this is a nice suite. This is amazing. They pulled out beds. They didn't let my parents go anywhere. And then they said, okay, so we're going to be in every 30 minutes. Every 30 minutes, they were checking me. They were taking blood samples from me. And that night, the 17th, my parents were taking shifts as well as Chris were taking shifts in and out, just to make sure that, you know, go home, shower, eat, whatever they needed to do to stay up. That night, I remember waking up in and out because magnesium makes you really loopy. So I remember waking up and actually seeing my dad cry. And I kind of looked at him. I was like, why are you crying? He said, oh, no reason. And I was like, oh, there's got to be something. Or what are you not telling me? He was like, I'm just a little worried about you. It's okay. Go back to sleep. You need your rest. So the next morning, I don't remember any of it. And it's change of shifts. Chris comes in. And they keep telling, oh, you know, everything's okay, especially him, because they're telling my parents the most important information for some reason. And he's like, well, then I'm going to work. Is that okay? Can I go to work? And they're like, yeah, yeah, because we're keeping this baby in her. They kept telling him the baby wasn't coming. The baby wasn't coming. So he went to work, and my mom was in the room with me. And again, every 30 minutes, I'm getting blood drawn. And finally, it's, I think, around 3:30 p.m., because I remember the time, and I remember the head doctor coming in, because they had called him in, and there were like five doctors and a couple nurses, and him saying, you guys are playing God right now. She's going to end up dying. I want this baby out of her. And I didn't dilate. So, and I was actually doing it with no pain meds. I was going to have a natural birth because I didn't want anything to happen to my baby. He was already going to be early. I didn't want him loopy or anything. And at that point in time, I was having contractions because they had started Pitocin to make me contract, but it wasn't normal. It was, they were double spiking, and then there was a little gap, and then there would be another double spike, and they just couldn't get me dilated anymore till about 3.5 inches. So he was like, no, we're going to have an emergency cesarean. And they were shift changing. So the anesthetist was leaving and another one wasn't coming on immediately. So they called him and he ran back up. And one of the nurses I had in my room was a student nurse, but she was great. She held my hand. She was like, everything's going to be fine. We can do this. So at about 6:30, I got wheeled into the surgery room. I didn't know what to expect. I knew my mom was crying. I was like, why are you crying? And she was like, no reason. So it happened so fast from me getting the epidural to them wheeling me in. I could actually still feel them cut me. And I was like, I can feel that. And the doctor's like, it really doesn't matter right now. We got to get this baby out of you now. And I was like, what's going on? Why now? Why now? He's like, count backwards, you know? And I was like, well, why now? And my mom said, because your blood pressure right now is 285 over 190. You had a seizure. That's why the doctor came in. They need to get the baby out, Tiffany. Let's just do this. So I was like, okay, no problem. That's okay, whatever. So I feel tugging and I see my mom's face and the color kind of leaves her face and I don't hear any crying, but I know they pulled the baby out of me. And then I hear them, the cord's wrapped around his neck. Four times the cord was wrapped around his neck. They unwrapped it. They gave him a shot of oxygen and then another shot. And then finally I heard the best blood-curdling cry in my life. I started crying. My mom started crying. And they wished him over to the baby station, started cleaning him off, wrapped him up real fast, put his hat on him, and then gave him to my mom, let me kiss him, and then said, we got to go now. And then rushed him off to the NICU. So I had questions, but I was so out of it, I couldn't really ask. And they said, well, you need to come with us, talking to my mom. So she put on the little bracelet and she went with the baby and they started doing what they were doing to me and closed me up. I was still so out of it. I didn't get to see him immediately. The next day, I remember them coming in because I was still right in front of the station and I remember them in and out all night. I remember Chris getting there at some point in time, but I didn't know when. So the next day I was like, when did you get there? He said, after my police escort. I said, what? He was like, yeah, they called. So security called the police. The police escorted me all the way down the freeway here so I could get here. They made your mom sign a waiver, Tiffany. Who were they saving, you or him? I was like, well, how's the baby? He's like, the baby's good. The baby already surpassed. There's three different levels of the NICU. There's level one, which is very intensive. They're on a lot of oxygen. They are either not breathing or they're on a heart monitor because their heart's not beating strong enough for them. Level two is because they have very low body weight, so they can't control their temperature and they need to learn how to bottle feed. And then level four is they're regulating their body, but they still need to gain weight before they can be discharged. So he was in level two. He didn't have any sort of infection. His heart was beating good. His lungs were amazing. He just didn't learn how to bottle feed. So they were still having to gavage feed, which is where they stick the tube down his throat and feed in the nutrients until they could start to wing him off of that. And I was like, okay, so he's fine. And then I looked at her, I said, when can I go see him? And she's like, you can't get up. Your blood pressure is still very unstable. That's why we have you laying on your left side. You're elevated.
Did Michael pick up all that noise? Do you want to get that? Then we'll go ahead and start. Okay.
Otherwise, they're being very good.
They're being awesome. Seriously awesome. It's a good story, isn't it?
Sit down over the other way so you don't drop anything else.
All right.
Okay, so I looked at her. I just said, I just had my baby. I want to see him. She said, you can't leave this room. We haven't gotten clearance. You can't eat. You can't do anything until I get clearance from the doctor. So it is now the 19th. My son is a day and a half old, and I still haven't been able to see him. Finally, one of his NICU nurses brings in this picture of this little tiny baby, 3 pounds, 5 ounces, 16 inches long. Preemie diapers are too big, so they're having to roll them up. The hat's too big. And in his tiny little hand is this giant finger. Well, the giant finger was my husband's. My husband had been there every hour he could be there, and he was the one holding him and looking at him, and he would come and say, he's so beautiful, you did a good job. But I still couldn't see him. So she posted his picture next to my bed, and she said, you need to get better, because that's what you have waiting for you. So it's the 20th now, and I'm still MPO. I haven't been able to eat. They only have an IV in me. I'm starving. My mouth is dry. They barely are giving me ice chips because they don't know what's going on because of all the fluid volume. Finally, the doctor walks in and was like, huh, you don't really look like that same person. Well, it turns out I had lost 45 pounds just like that. Just like that. It was all water weight. My blood pressure still was a little high, but it was slowly coming down because I was losing the water weight. And he was like, I'm going to give you another day. He said, let's see how much more you can lose in volume. And then if your blood pressure, if the top number can get under 190 for me, I'll put you in a wheelchair and we'll go see your baby. So finally the next day he came in and he was like, all right, let's do this. So they put me in a wheelchair, and it was crazy because the way that the hospital was made, the labor and delivery unit was far from the NICU. So it was literally almost a fourth of a mile walk down different hallways just to get there. So I couldn't make the walk at all. I was still with the cesarean, and then with my blood pressure, they're like, you have to be in this wheelchair. You can't do it yourself. So they wheeled me in there to see him. At that point in time, it wasn't the same nurse. It was this older nurse, and she was not nice to me. And she was like, just look at him. I was like, but I want to hold him. I want to touch him. She was like, put your hand in the little hole and touch him. But that's it. So I was a little depressed, and I just kept talking to him through the hole and telling him how much I loved him. And finally, I believe it was the 22nd, they're like, okay, you can start walking, Tiffany, because it's time for you to start healing, and we need you to start getting stronger. And he's going to need to start feeding soon because he's taken these feedings like a champ, and he's going to need to start breastfeeding. So you need to get ready. I was like, okay, no problem. So the first walk was a little painful, but by the time I got there, it was this really young nurse, and she was super cool. And she was like, have you held him yet? I was like, no, I haven't held him. And he's almost a week old, and I just want him to know that I love him. And she was like, well, let's hold him. So they put up a privacy curtain, and they pulled down my gown, and they said, this is called the kangaroo method. It's a skin-to-skin contact. It's to create the bond between the mother and the child. This is what usually happens right after birth, but because you were so sick and we needed to check on him, it couldn't occur. So I did it and immediately started crying. It was the best feeling in my life. My heart felt better. I felt better. And he kind of looked up at me and I saw his big eyes and I was like, oh my gosh, I really have a baby. This is crazy. So after that, I walked back to my room and then I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I would make 5 trips every day. And they're like, you shouldn't be out of bed. You still need to be in there. And we were trying to breastfeed the best we could, but he was so hungry all the time that we had to start doing more formula feeding so that he could gain weight. Finally, it was about 2 weeks I was there, and they moved him up to the next one because he was doing so well. My blood pressure still wasn't stable, though. They're like, you have to stay here another week. He can go home. And I just looked at him like, what do you mean he can go home? He's still really young, and they're like, no, he's thriving, and you don't want him here anymore. He needs to get sunlight, and he needs to be at the house, but you need to stay here. So at that point in time, it was heartbreaking, because here they are telling me that my baby gets to go home, but I have to stay another week. So I cried, and I didn't know what to do, and my mom was like, well, I'm going to take him. He's going to be at home with us. Chris can come over whenever he wants, but that's my son. Like, that's my grandson. That's my first grandbaby. I will take off work, whatever we have to do. She's like, we'll come visit you. So they discharged him to her, and I stayed. And I was only there for about 4.5 more days, and then finally got to go home and be with him. But it was just a crazy situation. It was really hard. He was so tiny for so long. The preemie clothes were really big, and then all of a sudden he hit 3 months and he was the size of this 9-month-old. And I was taking him to all the doctor's appointments, and he wasn't delayed. He was ahead of schedule. Finally, at 9 months, they told me, you don't need to be here anymore. And I was like, well, aren't you worried about his cognitive level? And they keep telling me he's this age, even though he's this age. Tiffany, he's walking. He's walking, and he's got 7 teeth already. He actually cut his first 2 teeth at 4 months. And then they just started popping in his mouth, and I couldn't keep him from eating regular food. And now, it's crazy, at the age of 9, he's 5'5", and he's the size of a high schooler, and he's very intelligent. He's in 4th grade, going into 5th. But he reads at a 9th grade level, and his math is at a 6th grade level, and everybody's like, he's so intelligent. But he kind of has an aura about him. I think it's because he was born early, and God really did help me a lot making sure that he was healthy, because he absorbs feelings in a room. If it's chaotic and intense, he can feel that, and he tries to calm the situation down because he doesn't like it. At first, it was a little rough for him, too, because he did develop febrile seizures because he was born early, so his body couldn't regulate his temperature all the time. So for the first 5 years of his life, I had to deal with seizures almost every other month because the heat would get to him or an illness would get to him. But he still kind of has that personality where he can walk into a room, and if somebody needs a hug or if they just need something nice said, then he walks straight up to the stranger and will talk to him and kind of hold their hand a little bit. It's really weird. He's told stories a couple of times where he's like, you smell that? And I'm like, smell what? And he's like, oh, smells like heaven. I'm just like, okay, what are you talking about, kid? And he's like, I don't know, remember when you used to sing to me? And when he was in the NICU, I sang to him every day. Lots and lots of different songs, a lot of hymns, a lot of biblical songs just to give him strength. But he pulled through, and sometimes I don't know how, but he just knows when I need strength, and he'll come and talk to me, and I'm just like, how are you 9? So he is definitely my miracle child. and he's very modest. He doesn't like me talking about it a lot. He's very sensitive, and I love that. You know, as big as he is, he stands up for the little guy, and he's not afraid to cry. So I'm very lucky to have him.
That is the most remarkable story. Mm-hmm. And you are a gifted storyteller.
Oh, you really thank are. You.
Really, truly, I know.
I
just
like, started to tear up.
It's really beautiful. And
thank you.
It sounds like you have this really amazing son who's like intuitive and, you know.
Yeah,
I sensitive.
Do. Total empath.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. The world needs people with compassion.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's so good to hear that young people have it still. You know, I worry about young people these days. And
yeah. Well,
society.
You know, being a nurse too, when I first moved to Payson, I was a special needs nurse. So I dealt with a lot of autistic children. And I mean, my brother's handicapped. So my whole life I've dealt with special needs, but my kids are the biggest fans. All these medals you see around my house, they are unified partners in the Special Olympics and have been. I helped start the unified team in Payson. Before we moved here, they had no unified partners. They really didn't even know that there was a program that a regular person could compete with an athlete and they could go together. And I told them, oh my gosh, you don't know about Play Unified? Let's do this. Let's start this. So I started for track and field, and then this year we did basketball, track and field, and swimming in Play Unified. And they're actually 1 million strong right now nationwide for Play Unified. It's a very big push that they're doing. But both my kids are amazing little helpers. And when it comes to special needs, they see no difference. So they have a lot of really good relationships in the community because of that. And it's important that you teach them at a very young age, different is not bad, different is good. And we all need to get along to make it. So yeah, I'm very, very blessed with the two little kids that I have.
I have a son who's 4 turning 5 in August. And doing this project has really helped teach me how to be a better mom, you know, in many ways, you know, because we've heard stories from women of all generations and the way they talk about just motherhood and what it means mm-hmm. to them and, you know, the kind of kids that they've raised. And it's really been very interesting mm-hmm. and insightful for me as someone who's looking down the road of, you know, trying to grow the best kid I can.
Yeah, that's hard. Society itself is so harsh and so mean, and you still have to teach them how to love and be open-minded and still be able to be vulnerable but street smart so they don't get taken advantage of. Yeah.
So do you want to tell us about your second birth?
Okay,
cool.
That's fine.
What is the age gap? Was it planned?
It was not planned. Again, they are 2 years, 1 month, and 11 days apart. Again, I actually got pregnant around the same time in November. And this time we had two boys, and I really wasn't ready for another one because I was so sick and very selfishly was thinking, if I get pregnant again, I'm going to get sick and I'm going to die and somebody else is going to raise my kid. And I don't want that. So in December, I noticed him sleeping more, and I just kind of looked at him and said, if I take a pregnancy test and I'm pregnant, I might hurt you. And he kind of laughed. And he said, well, you don't have to do that because my stomach's been upset lately and I've been super tired, so I know you're pregnant already. And I was like, please. So I took 3, and they all came back positive. And, you know, but this pregnancy was much different. Internally, I could feel myself, and I was happy, and I had more energy, and it felt completely different. I totally went with a different doctor because I wanted somebody who was going to listen to me, voice my opinions immediately, and not just, oh, well, this is this is just what it is. This is just what it is. So they actually placed me with a high-risk doctor, and he was absolutely amazing. He listened to me. He was receptive. He took all the precautions he needed to throughout the whole pregnancy. I didn't start gaining weight until my second term, and then it wasn't a lot of weight. It was here, there weight, and I was able to walk and live the normal pregnancy, kind of love your pregnancy body. I ate, I was happy, you know, it was completely different than the first time. I think I was about 4.5 months, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have another boy, this is great. I can't be a mother of a little girl because I just will fight all the time. And her dad looked at me and said, you are in for a rude awakening. I had a dream. I said, no, you and your dreams and all this, and you felt the morning sickness before I did. You're so full of it. Just leave me alone. I had a dream. We're having a little girl. And then the week after that, my mom said, I had a dream. You're having a little girl. I said, I'm not listening to you. I'm going to get my ultrasound in I think it was about 2 weeks, because I would have been 5.5 months. And they had been monitoring me. She was completely healthy. She was moving. Her heart rate was great. Finally, at 5.5, mm-hmm. All the dogs, sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay. At 5.5, they did it, and they said, it's a girl. And I immediately started crying. I was so depressed. It's like, no, you don't understand my attitude, plus another woman's attitude. We're not going to make it. And the doctor's like, no, I'm pretty sure it's a girl. You can come back in a month and we'll do a 3D ultrasound because you're high risk. But I'm pretty sure that this is a girl. I don't think it's changing on me any. So
I'm going to have to pause again. There must be someone outside. Or yeah. Movement.
Christian, go tell them to be quiet, please.
Well, now we know where he gets his empathicness. Yeah. His daddy's empathic and your mom.
He's clumsy.
Well, you can't be everything. You can only be really good at 3 things, maybe.
Yeah, and he's grown so much that he just is not grown into his body. He's still very awkward doing things, and it's just...
He'll get there.
Yeah.
Be an athlete or something.
Yeah, well, and he loves, I mean...
Coordinated.
He actually wants to be a scientist. He loves rocket ships and satellites, so... That's his big thing. Yeah.
We need someone to help NASA.
Uh-huh.
Programs are...
Thank you.
Falling by the wayside.
Uh-huh. Oh, Honey Bun was trying to get in the yard?
No. The dogs
are
in the gate.
Oh.
Okay.
All right, so...
Can you go back to it's a girl?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I found out it was a girl. I was crying my eyes out. I called everybody. I said, you guys are right, and I don't like you. I'm on my way home now. I got home. Both my parents were sitting at the bar. My husband was there. His brother was there. And there was just girl stuff everywhere. They'd rushed out, and they were so excited. I literally had a closet full of girl clothes and all these girl blankets, and he had this big smile and these pink balloons, and I was like, what is going on here? He said, you should be happy. We have 2 boys, and now we have a girl. I said, you have 2 boys. And he was like, no, we have 2 boys. So I started to embrace the fact that I was pregnant with a girl. I realized that at that point in time, too, that's why all of my cravings were different, completely different. With him, I was very healthy. Lots of pineapple and baked chicken and broccoli. Couldn't really stomach fried foods. Her, I wanted french fries and pizza. And I love candy. So I was like, okay, this. So you've been trying to tell me the whole time. Christian.
I'll get that.
Don't answer it. Just hang it up, please. So,
it's okay. You need to get settled in.
Okay, sit down. Thanks. Welcome. So if I would have just been listening to my body, I probably would have known that it was going to be a girl. And at that point in time, we were in the process of selling our house because we wanted to buy a house here. And I ended up, well, we ended up moving in with my parents, and my grandmother was there. And I'm about 7.5 months pregnant. Everything's going great. Got all the way up to 38 weeks, and I found out my cousin actually committed suicide the day before I went into my doctor's appointment. And when I went into the doctor's appointment, I was like, I'm going to eat at Lone Star. I was still a little depressed because it was my favorite cousin who actually would come over and cook for me when I was pregnant with Christian and make sure that everything was done. And she used to rub my belly and call him Spike all the time, because I don't know if you're big on like soap operas. At that point in time, General Hospital, there was this lady pregnant, and they always used to call her kid Spike. So she used to call my baby Spike. Come on, Spike, I'm ready to meet you. Let's do this. Come on, I'm ready. So I was a little depressed, and when I went into the doctors, he said, man, you had a good run at this. I said, yeah, I know. I'm going to go eat lunch. And he's like, no, we're walking across the parking lot, and you're going to have this baby today. Let's meet your daughter. I said, no. It's scheduled for next week. It's the 29th of August. You scheduled it for the 5th of September. I don't want to have her today. I want to go eat lunch. I haven't eaten all day. I'm hungry. I want to go eat lunch. And he said, no, no. We're going to go check you in. And to make sure you check in, I'm going to walk with you. So we come out of the room. My mom's like, are you ready? And he's like, yeah, we're going to go check her in now. She said, what? It's like her blood pressure's a little high. And she said, I told you not to worry about it. You know, things happen in life and you just have to deal with it. And I told you last night to stop crying. I knew this was going to happen. So we walked over to the hospital and we checked in. And he said, okay, I'll be back at 5:30. And I kind of looked at him. I was like, it is 10 in the morning. What do you mean 5:30? And because it's a cesarean, you can't eat. So I was starving, and then I started getting angry, and he's like, if you get angry, your blood pressure's just going to go higher. So at 5:30, they came into the room and said, well, there's another patient, and she has a fever, so we have to get her first. I was like, oh, this is going to take forever. This is crazy. So finally, they wheeled me into the room, and it was just like that. Before I knew it, she was out crying, and she had a head full of black hair, and her dad was crying, and my mom was crying, and I was like, why is everybody crying? Because she's healthy, and you're healthy, and everything's okay. So they took her downstairs, and in the elevator, my husband was standing there next to my mom, and they were looking at her and just saying how beautiful she was, and this doctor got in with them. And the nurse was like, oh, look how long her fingers are. She's going to be a piano player. She could do this. And, of course, my mother being who she is, no, she's going to be a surgeon. And the doctor looked at her and said, my mom said the same thing about me, and I'm a surgeon. And it was funny because I was working and running an urgent care, and I worked in a very predominant Beverly Hills medical office. And I had to bring her to work one day with me because she got sick, so I wanted the physician's assistant to see her. And we were there, and there was this really nice Ferrari sitting right next to my car. And at 5, she looks at me and said, huh, what kind of car is that, Mommy? And I was like, it's a Ferrari. I said, you see that? That's Dr. So-and-so. He's a neurosurgeon. Okay, I want to be a neurosurgeon. So to this day, she will be 8 in August. Every day she asks me, okay, what exactly do I need to know? If I practice this, I can be a doctor, and how long do I have to go to school? So she kind of already has her, what she wants to do mapped out. We'll see if she really is going to be a neurosurgeon. She's very much stand up for the little guy, but she's very athletic. She's full of fire. Everybody who sees her play sports, they're like, man, she's amazing. She is the only little girl on all of the boys' teams. She plays football. She plays baseball. They kept telling her, no, you should play softball. And she said, no, I'm going to play baseball. So she was the only girl in the league this year. and she had to try out, and she was amazing. Her coaches loved her. I mean, she's my little spitfire. She's full. I keep thinking she's going to be a lawyer because she has valid points when she argues already, and she can maintain a very calm, peaceful argument voice, which is something not normal. But she's very much a tomboy, so I'm okay with that because I keep telling her, you don't have to find yourself feminine until you're 35, and I'm okay with that. Save me some heartache and trouble. I am okay. So
it's fun just watching their lives unfold, right? And you have really no idea what paths are going to take them in what directions.
Exactly. And like I said, it was night and day. I mean, between both stories and how it went down. So they're very much night and day children. They are. So.
My night.
Yes, your night. Yeah, she does not have a scared bone in her body. And at a very young age, she was like that. I can remember one time it was super late. It was probably about 9:30, and she was about 18 months old. And I went to check her bed, and she wasn't there, and I got really worried. She's standing in the dark hallway giggling. Just like that, giggling. I'm like, I found her. I said, "You're not scared, Mama?" I was like, oh my gosh, this child's going to give me a heart attack. Yeah, not scared of a thing at all. So.
But I did scare my brother every single night.
I'm sure. You have a really incredible family.
Thank you
so much for talking with us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
I enjoy, like I said, after Christian's birth, I talked to a bunch of people just because I wanted to get the fact that you could have a very traumatic experience, but get through it. And it is a lot about your support team. For a year and a half after he was born, my parents would tell me bits and pieces, because I was so loopy and so out of it, I didn't realize what was going on. So, I mean, I really did see my dad crying, and to this day, he was like, "I thought you were going to die on us. Like, I just knew you weren't going to be here." So it took about a year and a half for them to come completely clean with me. This is what was going on, and this is what was happening, and yeah, so.
I can't imagine your emotional state of being a new mother and having not held your child, not seeing your child.
It was very hard. Like I said, it was, when she brought that picture in, it gave me hope. Because it was the only thing I had. I didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know if he had my nose or my husband's nose. I didn't know if he was pale, or I didn't know if he had hair. I didn't know anything. So when she brought that picture in, I was like, oh, he's real. There's a real baby there. You know, there's something I can really see now. And that's kind of what gave me faith. And I was like, okay, we're going to get better. We're going to do what we need to do because I don't want to be here. I want to be next to my baby. And I treated it like a job. I was next to him all the time. I only stepped out of the NICU when they did their shift changes at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And then I was back in the door at 7:30. I wouldn't go back to my room until about 11:30, midnight, and they always just say, you need to go rest. I'm like, no, I need to be next to my son. So, I was there.
When you reflect back on your birth experiences, mm-hmm. is there any way you can, like, come up with a word or a phrasing of words that kind of summarizes it to some degree? Because we're putting these into themes, mm-hmm. and so that's helpful and insightful for us.
With Christian, my whole pregnancy was a train wreck. But out of the train wreck, there was this new sense of, like, faith and hope delivered. And that was my big thing, was I had a very new outlook on what God could really do for you, because he was so healthy. But I was just so sick. So that was very good for me. And with Michaela, it was just, the whole pregnancy was very joyful. I really got to see why women are like, oh, I could do this all the time. I'm like, oh, well, good for you. But I mean, I felt that joy. I got to embrace the fact, well, I'm pregnant and I like the glow and I like everything else. So, yeah, it was just completely different.
Awesome. All right, anything else before we shut it down?
No, I think it's okay. Good.